long haul of that gospel, for sure. But it's worth every word. Every word. So, of course, this morning, in this parable of the prodigal son, which is unique to Luke, another one of Luke's great stories, this one and the road to Emmaus. The two disciples are on the road, it's the eve, it's the night of Easter Day, and the discussion. These are, those two, this one and that one, probably is just greatest pieces of writing, bar none. And it's a riddle through with sibling rivalry. Now, I know if I say, I'm sure none of you have ever heard of the Smothers Brothers, you'd agree with me. I know that times pass, and I can't remember exactly the who's, but one of the lines was, "Mother always loved you better than me." I think that was one of the Smothers Brothers' Mother loved you best, exactly. Mother loved you best. So in this case, you know, we've got the eldest son, and, you know, gee, Dad always loved that younger son better than me, and look what's happened. The prodigal son, it's interesting, it has this name. This morning, by the way, is kind of a Bible study sermon. You're all going to have to work a little bit because it just lends itself to that. So the first thing is the prodigal son. The prodigal piece is kind of interesting because that word never appears in the story. It's an addendum, actually, and only arises in the 16th century with the translation of the Bible into English. And it's a loan word. It's borrowed from prodigere in Latin. A prodigious is borrowed from it as well. It simply meant in the original extravagant generosity, extravagant wealth, tipping to the point of almost too much. That was its association, its connotation. And with the advent of Bibles, particularly in vernacular, in common languages, but in English, there were column headings at the top. And so the prodigal son became the column heading for this parable. And that's how it got, that prodigal word got put on to the whole account. But as we'll find out as we go ahead, there's two prodigal individuals in this story. That's the sneaky way Luke always has of doubling things up. So at any rate, the story starts off, and it starts off rather quickly, because what do you read? You can certainly open your bulletins back up if you want to just double check. I don't mind at all. And that's why it's in paragraphs. The parable begins literally at that second paragraph. There was a man who had two sons. And what does the younger say?
Give me my money now.
Give me, thank you. Spoken to us by a financial planner. I knew you'd get that. I knew you'd respond. You're thinking, right? Exactly. You're thinking the tax withholding and also the dividends. But anyway. But it's a give me. Not, do you mind if I have my inheritance up front, Dad? Or, you know, I'm thinking of buying a house in a nice suburb of Jerusalem. I'd like a down payment. No, give me, right off the bat, give me, give me, give me. So what does that tell you a little bit possibly about the personality of the younger son? What is it? Demanding, maybe impulsive, right? The title, perhaps, you know, that will belong to me. I mean, he's implying, Dad, I'm not going to wait until you're dead. I'd like to kind of have it now. So right off the bat, there's that kind of little bit of a dig, you know. Give me my share. Now, granted, that will belong to me. So at least he opens the door up for an adequate disposition. But then we go ahead, and so the man divided the property between them, not necessarily equally. See? Divided. I mean, it's the implication that the son has asked for his share. We don't know if that's what he actually got. Because I bet Dad knew a little bit about this young man. And maybe he just, you know, gave him some of what he thought he was deserving. But nonetheless, it gets divided. So off he goes. And I love the term, squandered his property in dissolute living. So for those of you who have teenagers who are spending too freely, so you are squandering your allowance on dissolute living. And that'll get their attention for sure. And they'll say, have you been to church this morning? So what do you make about this pig stuff? He's up with the pigs. This is a little bit of a curveball, the pigs. Well,
so not complaining.
Especially to whom?
The Jews.
The Jews, right. The Jews regarded pigs as ritually unclean, so we know he's no longer with his own people, for one thing. The other little implication, the symbol of Rome was the sow feeding all of the piglets, you see. So that was a little bit about, the listeners would have gone, oh yeah, he's off with the Romans, he's in the big city, we all know what happens in big cities, you know, that's where he is. But it's apostasy. I mean, to be with pigs was about the worst kind of uncleanness as a Jew that you could experience. So he really is at rock bottom. And there's a little bit of an insinuation, yep, and he's off with the hated Romans. But when he came to himself, why do you think that happened? When he came to himself, that kind of immediately the turning point.
He was a girl.
Chuck.
I think he got sick and tired of being sick and tired.
He got sick and tired of being sick and tired, yeah. Hungry, yeah. What else might be in the story? Yes, way in the back.
He ran out of his inheritance.
Ah, right. He had run out of whatever had been given the upfront money, so now he's eating with the pigs again.
Divine intervention.
Yes.
Excuse me?
Divine intervention.
Divine intervention? Yeah. Yeah. He might have, now that he was
himself lower, the lowest level.
Lowest level, rock bottom, yeah. He was also completely out of the family dynamic, to borrow that term, and so maybe he began to realize, you know, Dad wasn't such a bad guy after all. You know, that when you catch your 10-year-old running away from home, you know, and then comes back and says, well, it wasn't so bad here after all, you know, that kind of thing. He came to himself, divine intervention, somehow he woke up and realized, I got to do something. So what does he do before he goes back? This is very significant, because it picked up just in a few sentences later, but what does he do? Thank you. I didn't pay that person to say that. He rehearses his confession. Father, I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands, which would even be better than the life I have with the pigs. He rehearses what he's going to say. Have you ever wanted or needed to do that when you know you have to say you're sorry? Yeah. I mean, we've all done that, and it's not actually a bad thing to do, is to sit down or stand in front of a mirror. I've done it. To think of what you're going to say that will immediately put the other person at ease. Father, I have sinned again. Right off the bat, I have sinned. I have profoundly screwed up. I mean, big time. And I am really sorry. So just put me on the payroll in an entry-level position. You know, that's giving Dad a way out, right? What?
The third shift behind
the third shift, right. Exactly. So we get to the resolution. Dad sees him coming. And this is why I wanted you to go over that rehearsal. What happens? I'm on the top of the next page. Dad runs, puts his arm around him, kissed him, and the son starts to do what? And he gets cut off. Do you notice that? He just never has to say, treat me like one of your hired hands. He doesn't even have to say that. And Dad has forgiven him. That's really significant. I no longer he called your son, but the father said to the slaves, quick, he's back, hooray, hooray. He's restored. You see, he doesn't have to propose a solution that I'll... Dad said, I didn't even hear that. I've heard what I need to hear. You're sorry, and you're back, and isn't that fantastic? Except the other son turns up. Okay, now it gets complicated. And so the older son, now this is, I'm the oldest of five. So I know what this older son stuff's all about, right? Because of those five, and it was part of the spread. So the youngest one day, because I was babysitting in frustration, said, you know, the problem around here is we've got three parents. Me being the third parent, well, you know, I'll be the oldest child, so you kind of get into that role. So the older son figures this all out, asks a few questions, puts it all together, and do you notice near the end, after he's complained, I've been saving my inheritance and investing it. I have been faithful to you, I've done everything right, and now whose son is it? This son
of yours,
right? What an insult. Not my brother, not my wayward brother, this son of yours has come back. And to really up the ante, he knows what's been going on with all this dissolute living, although maybe he's just reading a lot into it, but what's, again, besides the pigs, the ultimate insult is sexual immorality.
Yeah.
See? So, boy, talk about, you know, just sticking it into this. Awful. He's so angry about this. So, so angry. But yet, the father says, I've been fair. You have been with me always. You still get your fair share of the inheritance. But aren't you at least happy that your brother is back? Aren't you very less happy? And of course, that's the way the story is left up in the air. We don't really know if the older son was able to overcome his anger. Do you think that son was justified a little bit in being angry and jealous?
Absolutely.
Okay. Why is that? He behaved, yeah.
And he probably broke the rules of his religion, too. At the same time, he was out partying and having a good time.
The younger son was not exactly probably... He wasn't getting off to synagogue, right, Saturday mornings with a hangover, right? He probably might not have been doing that. What else about the older son? Do we all sometimes feel... I have to sympathize with the older son, to be honest. I mean, I would be delighted if my brother is back, but, you know, do you feel it's a little unfair?
Yeah.
So that sometimes God is unfair, in a way, in a sense. Because, of course, the story is about the boundless forgiveness of God. Yeah, it's tough to accept that sometimes. Let me read you a quote from a blog on this passage. It's the father who is truly the prodigal in the gospel, the one who loves extravagantly and does not withdraw that love in the face of the disrespect and greed and resentment shown by his sons. The God we see mirrored in the prodigious welcome of the father is in fact the same God we saw reflected last week in the barren fig tree being kept alive until it bears fruit. One of my favorite pieces of this gospel is this seemingly insignificant detail that the father, when he saw his long-gone son approaching, picked up his robes and ran, which would be very undignified for respectable men in those days to have been seen running through the fields. And yet this father tears down the road, robes flying to meet his child. What an awesome gift. Have any of you seen the Rembrandt painting? There's a very famous painting, The Prodigal Son by Rembrandt. And the older son is in the shadows behind, and the younger son is kneeling before the father, and the father just very tenderly has his hands on the shoulders of the younger son, but there, kind of in the background, is standing very rigidly, is the elder son. And that's the image that he has painted for us at the very end of the parable. Story. We all are in here somewhere. That's what I love about this parable. For either the dad, or the younger son, the older son, we all have a place in this story, this wonderfully rich story of God's grace and mercy. Let us pray. Lord God, in your teachings and in the wisdom of Jesus, we see a pattern of mercy and love, which God so freely gives us. Help us too to come to our senses when we have sinned and when we are wrong, that we may be truly sorry, that we may confess, that we may make amends, and that may we always know that you love us, that you are with us, and that all that is ours is going to be with us forever in the kingdom of heaven, in this earth, and in this life. Through Jesus Christ.